This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast. And not only am I here with my co-host, Jon. Hello, Jon.
Hello, Dave.
But also here with two special guests. So we've got Paranda returning to us, but we've also got a new special guest joining him, Ken Foster, who is, I think it's fair to say, an expert in the world of information security, cybersecurity, you think?
He's been around the block a couple of years, I would say.
I think so. And we've got, I think, actually a pretty interesting topic of PCI DSS 4.0. And I think, really, the interview is pretty good. And it's also like a reasonable length. So without further ado, I think we can get started.
Let's do it.
So welcome both Paranda, who is a returning guest for us, and welcome Ken to the Roaring Elephant Podcast.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Jon.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jon. Happy to be on.
Good to have you.
Very good indeed to have you here. So as Paranda, you've a veteran here on the Roaring Elephant Podcast, being with us before. But Ken, you're a new face and a new voice. So do you want to introduce yourself first?
Yeah, sure. Ken Foster. I've been doing cybersecurity or IT for going on about 30 years now. Once I got out of the Navy, kind of interesting career path there, you know, came from working on missile radar systems into back when we called this information assurance instead of cybersecurity. So worked in multiple verticals and worked in just about every aspect of cybersecurity in the field, and just constantly keeping up with the new things coming down the pipe. So
definitely. And only coming thicker and faster right now, I can assume.
Yeah, it's you know, the landscape is hard to keep up with, and it's ever changing. But it's kind of funny, some of the stuff you look at is everything old is new again, because we keep seeing a recurring theme. You know, because you know, one thing I like to say about it is we still suck at a lot of the basic blocking and tackling in cybersecurity. So we got to figure out how to get back around to that. So
yeah, makes sense. Awesome. And Paranda, for those that may have missed your previous episode with us, please introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. I'm Paranda Das, CEO and co-founder of Sotero. We are a data security, cybersecurity company based in Boston, Massachusetts. And to Ken's point about we suck at a lot of basic things, we are a company that's trying to make sure that sucking at basic things doesn't jeopardize data. We're attempting to take a lot of those basic capabilities that should exist and make it easier to deploy across all forms of data. That's who we are, and that's what we do.
Wonderful. All right. So we're going to kick off with a bit of a different topic here. So we're going to talk a little bit about PCI DSS 4.0. And I must admit, like, before we'd sort of started this conversation, I had no idea that there was a new version of PCI DSS around. I say around because I don't even know, is it fully released? Is it out there? But anyway, we're probably diving too far ahead.
It's been out for 2 years, technically.
Wow, okay.
but it came out in phases. The second phase, which is the more technical implementation, goes into effect. You have to be compliant with it by March of 2025. So it's been about 2 years now. So people have had a couple of years to start preparing for this, but it's shocking. As you go out and talk with peers and talk with the community, just like you said, you know, you're around this community, you didn't even know there's a new version. So I think a lot of people are still getting caught off guard a little bit and not fully prepared. I think if you're in the big fintech space, you're used to it. But if you're in the smaller, maybe on that that end user point of sale side of the house where you're being provided for by another another provider. It maybe has passed, slipped by you a little bit that this big change is coming, and it's much more prescriptive than it's ever been. So it's a lot of changes, and like Parinder said, some of them are basic things that should be being done anyway, but they're sometimes difficult and they're major changes to the way you operate and the way you run and cause friction. So having a partner and a tool set out there that can help you implement it faster at a lower cost and in a way that makes you more efficient is it's incredibly valuable and incredibly important.
Nice. So maybe to kind of step back a little bit, for anyone that has been hiding under a rock and maybe PCI DSS is a foreign acronym to them, What is PCI DSS?
It's a payment card industry standard, right?
So I think there's an interesting story there, Dave. Yeah. PCI DSS, I mean, we're talking about the latest evolution of PCI DSS 4.0, right? If you go back to the beginning, they were one of the first industry or segments that actually mandated security on data. And that was critical because they were the payment card, which is the credit card or card industry, right? And they had the most exposure or vulnerability. And they mandated a series of things, right? About how to keep data secure, encryption across the wire, who could store data, who couldn't, et cetera, et cetera. But today, if you take a broader look at the industry, it's not just PCI DSS, it's not just the payment card industry, it's a broad set of sectors that are all facing the same challenges. And it all arises from what's happening around data exploitation, data exfiltration, data theft, the fraud, et cetera, et cetera. We kind of tend to look at it as a convergence that's accelerating, right? Their first level of instructions was like, do the basics, right? Now they're saying the basics are not sufficient. You have to do a lot of things much deeper and broader and tighter. But that also coincides with it, whether it's GDPR or HIPAA or all of that state-level privacy regulations. They're all coming towards the same thing and saying whatever was done at a surface level doesn't suffice anymore. You have to be serious about what you're doing and go really deep. That's the context in which to look at PCI DSS 4.0, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's 100%, right? It's like I said, it became more prescriptive. And PCI, if you're not familiar with PCI, because it is typically very payments, credit card, debit card, banking industry, it tends to be those guys, those people, you know, like I said, retail, point of sale things, anybody who does that, they all have to. Anybody who allows you to swipe a credit card, there's something they have to do that is around PCI. They may not themselves. So if your local corner coffee shop or a corner pub or something like that may not be themselves directly responsible for it, but the person who provided them the machine that they swipe your credit card or the software on their computer that they run your debit and credit card through, that is falls under PCI, but it may be being managed by an outside party. But if you look at the controls, if you're familiar with ISO 27001, you're familiar with CIS benchmarks, you're familiar with the GDPR privacy laws, there's overlap between all of them. They all have the basic same security tenets, right? It's encrypt your data, limit access, limit the exposure from the network, don't use unsecure channels, don't use clear text network transport, you know, vulnerability management, document your processes, document how your systems work. So it's they all interact across any regulatory or even just best practices in cybersecurity. Just, and I'll say, like, one of the big differences, and we'll keep it to the encryption side of the house, right, is PCI for years just said, hey, it's a good, you should encrypt your data. That was all it said. That's all it said. It never gave you any requirements on how it should be encrypted, what should be encrypted, just encrypt. So a lot of companies went with my storage device has block level encryption. which works great if somebody walks into your room and steals the hard drive and walks out with it, because if they just take the hard drive, they can't access it. But by nature of the way that works, the application already has access and they're hacking in through the application, not directly into your data center or into your office building and stealing a hard drive typically. So it really didn't protect you against anything from that standpoint. Now it says you must encrypt down to a field, file, or database level, and you must encrypt this sensitive data, the credit card number, this other privacy information falls on top of that, right? PII is part of this, so you also have to encrypt some of that. And it can't be displayed in clear text, and it has to have limited access, and it must be encrypted at the appropriate level now that makes it much more difficult to get into. So it's, like I say, it's becoming much, much more prescriptive. And it's stuff that you probably should have been doing anyway if you fall under any other best practices or cybersecurity thing. But it's a bare, I will call it still, a bare minimum that you should be doing to protect data, right? So ultimately, we're talking data protection here. So
So if it's got more prescriptive, is it also a penalty now? I mean, if you don't do so it, then do
it. There's always been a penalty, Jan, always. The thing is it's not a law. It's a set of guidelines that were created by the major credit card providers. So this was created Amex, Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. They're the four major credit card providers. This is something they put out to their people that are processing and doing the transaction processing. So they will fine you. I will say, though, the fines are relatively, in the grand scheme of the amounts of money we're talking about, they're pretty insignificant fines. Some people, I've seen it over my career, looked at the fine as cost of doing business. It's cheaper to pay the fine than it is to do what you're supposed to do. Now, I do think now that we're seeing this privacy overlay, especially in the EU and other parts of the world, but even the US is catching up with this, those fines are serious. They have real teeth. And to be honest with you, whatever you're doing to protect PII and PHI and personal data is the same thing you should be doing for credit card data or debit card data as well. So if you're doing that stuff and following those practices, you should be good across the board. So I think we got to get people out of the mentality when we talk about something like PCI DSS that it is just the thing for payment cards. In reality, it's a little more guidance and prescriptive on top of something you should be doing anyway to be protecting people's data. And you know, in today's world, we hear about a new breach or a new attack or something, you know, almost, I think people are getting a little numb to it. They just expect the data out there, but we've got to get better. And we got to understand that not all of this data is being stolen at this point in time to do something malicious right now. Yes, there are very much entities out there that this is a quick cash grab. Let me order myself 20 iPads and ship them to somewhere overseas, somewhere out of my country, and very quickly get a hit for that. But in reality, there's other things that they're collecting data and putting it into giant data, big data models, and doing some AI and data learning on it for something else down the road. We don't know what that is, but that's definitely happening out there right now.
Yeah. Just to make sure, for the acronyms, PII stands for personally identifiable information, which is basically being caught by GDPR and that kind of legislation at the moment, right?
Yeah. And PHI is personal health information. And then there's the further description of personal information on top with the privacy. I apologize if anybody with the jargon, I'm people around it. So, but yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, a lot of this is because like the stakes are getting higher, especially with the, like with, as you said, GDPR and things like that. Do you think that that is what kind of motivated like PCI DSS 4.0? Like, is it a mixture of that and the fact that, you know, attackers and attacks are getting more sophisticated and like the breaches are getting larger? Or what do you think, like, really got, because like PCI DSS 3 had been around for a very long time and was, you know, to your point, it, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a leaky bucket, but it definitely wasn't even like a minimum set of like recommendations, but, and yet there it was. So what do you think really pushed the committee, the payment card industry to really think, okay, this isn't actually good enough, we must do better?
I think the ineffectiveness of the prior set of regulations is probably the biggest thing. I mean, as Kim was talking about it, I mean, we are numb to reading about or hearing about data breaches and data losses and the kind of damage that it's wreaking on the general population, right? So that there is that part of it. And it was obvious to anybody just taking a very broad look at it and saying, this is like what we're saying doesn't even begin to cover the surface or touch the surface of data protection. And Ken may or may not agree with my assessment of this. Anything done by a committee tends to take a long time. That's probably the delay and why it took so long for PCI DSS 4.0 to be rolled out. And when you have regulation or recommendations, regulations, whatever you want to call them, being rolled out by the same people that are drafting them and are responsible for implementing them, things tend to go slow.
Yeah. I'll add to that. I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, as being part of, I was on some of the technical committees for PCI 4.0 4 years before it came out, you know, 3 to 4 years before it came out. And, you know, when you're in the large fintech community, you're invited to be part of this, right? You're part of the PCI council, you're part of the technical. And one of the things that's a challenge, and this is a challenge with a lot of things, but PCI specifically, is we have to look at not what the big credit card, big fintech companies, big credit card processors can afford to do and have the people to do it. We have to look at that smaller shop. We have to look at what would it cost for your local grocery store, your local coffee shop, your local ice cream shop, your local restaurant, what your local small business, right? What would it cost them to implement this technical control? And if you go too far, you put that cost of implementation out of reach for that smaller business, and you put an onerous lift on them that makes it very difficult for them to do anything. Well, what happens when you make it too hard for somebody to do something? They either don't do it, or they figure out a way around it and make it leaky. And leaky bucket is the right way to put how we've been, and we're still that way. But I mean, ultimately, the changes become, right, the biggest problem in the financial sector, fintech industry, it's fraud. This costs card companies a lot of money. This costs everybody who's involved in that transaction processing a lot of money, right? And nobody's in the business to lose money. They're in the business to generate revenue. And when you look at the way this works, is credit card and debit card transaction companies and the big companies, they make pennies, nickels and dimes on each transaction, whereas the person selling the goods, the retailer, makes the majority of the money off of the transaction, right? Now, they pay a piece to this and pay, you know, it's the whole loop has little toll gates where people pay little pieces of money. So it's about a volume thing, right? So it's how many can I through my system? How much volume do I do? That's how these companies make money. Now, they make a lot of money, right? We're talking companies that are in the Fortune 100, Fortune 50, even Fortune 5 that transact and process debit cards. So ultimately, the reason this is changing and get more prescriptive is they're losing money because of these breaches, right? They have to pay insurance, they have to do this. So it's a financial impact to them. So they really look at this and go, we need to be better because we're paying out a lot, because we're a very highly targeted industry, because there is an easy way for credit card fraud, debit card fraud, whatever. It's easy for people to monetize this and make money off of it. So it's a highly attacked industry. So we just got to be better at it. And we realized that the old PCI standards were just not doing enough to protect it. You know, outside the encryption, and there's a lot of identity controls in there, there's a lot of automation requirements that have never been there that says you must now automate log collection. You must now automate how to look at alerting. You must,
because
the problem is we're talking volume, right? Transaction volume, trillions of transactions a day are happening on companies' networks. Being able to keep up with that volume with people, you cannot put enough people on it. You can't have enough people looking at it. You can't, you just can't. So it's got to be automated, and it has to be tuned in a way that makes the false positives go down and understand fraud and understand that. Now, I do think that we're seeing a lot of advancements with AI and stuff like that with the data sets that these companies have, and we're going to be able to see some really cool stuff come down the road. But ultimately, you've got to make sure that the cost of doing this doesn't preclude you from actually making money and providing a service. But it's about balance. It's really about risk balance. And what we're ultimately talking about is risk mitigation and balancing of risk. So PCI is part of that. You know, you could say the same about ISO 27001, which should be pretty familiar to most people in the industry in the EU, right? It's still not the end all be all. It is a point in time, today it's still a point in time, assessment that says we're doing what we should be doing to be reasonably secure, reasonably protect this data and mitigate risk to a level that is acceptable by the business and by our customers. Until it becomes unacceptable by one of those entities and it causes revenue, most of that time, that's what it takes to make the change, right? And that's what we ultimately are dealing with here.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes a huge amount of sense. So, I mean, you've talked already about kind of an increased focus on encryption, which I'm sure like everyone can understand the benefits of having sensitive data encrypted. But one of the other areas where there seems to be a more of a focus, which to me as the layperson sounds kind of trickier to deal with, is kind of real-time anomaly detection, which also I believe is something that is a bit more of a focus in PCI DSS 4. Like that to me sounds a heck of a lot more complicated than the encryption side of things. Is that is my read kind of correct, or is that not the case?
Go ahead, Parandra. I'll let you go first on this one.
So. Yes, Ken obviously is extremely qualified and situated to answer this, but I'll give you my perspective briefly on this. The simple requirement of moving from block level encryption to more targeted, granular encryption, right? Think about the challenges that poses. The companies that say we think we have sensitive data here, it's being encrypted to disk. We're done. We're good, right? Now it says that's not enough. You need to go granularly identify PII or PHI and then encrypt it. That creates an issue because the companies don't know where the data is. So you start with data discovery and classification, right? That's your first step. And then you think about volumes of data that you have to go through in the different data repositories. There's your first step. Then you come up with encryption, and then you have to deal with encryption on many different platforms. It's not one. There's different databases, there's file services, there's cloud. So you add that challenge to it, right? Then we were talking about governance and access management and auditability, right? Dozens, if not hundreds of applications and users interact with these data sets, right? Being able to tie that access back, manage that access, manage the privileges and audit them, that's another huge challenge that popped. And when you think about the number of the volume, as Ken pointed out, both on the logging as well as the access transactions, think about being able to identify in real time which one of those could possibly be presenting a threat. None of these are possible in a manual way. There has to be automation. And that's where I think that anomaly detection or threat detection and prevention comes into play. If you don't have an engine or a foundation for being able to do this automated, there's no hope of being successful.
Yeah, and again, I think Parandra, to feed off of that a little bit is so the data is everywhere, right? Not only is it everywhere anywhere on your network. It's probably on your laptop. It's probably on, you know, it's on USB drives. It winds up everywhere. Data moves around because people are trying to do things and do their job. And if it doesn't have the right limitation to start with, data moves, right? It winds up in all those places. So now I also need to know how all these systems interact together. Where is it supposed to be moving data? How is it supposed to be talking to a web front end, to an application layer, to a database layer? Where am I supposed to be storing files? Who needs access to sensitive data to do claims, right? When they're working with a bank and doing claims, they may need more access and be able to see full credit card numbers, where my call center agent may only need to see the last four, right? So I can have to think about all this whole, how the whole system works, how it's interacted, who's accessing it, where. Now you get into anomaly detection. Now I've got to figure, I have to know enough about how all this works in harmony to actually be able to dial in my anomaly detection and know what is normal and what is not normal. The problem a lot of times comes down to is the anomalies may already be happening and you've not been looking at them in that way. So now you're normal as anomalies, right? Because it takes a very long time with humans doing this. It takes a very, very long time to distill this massive volume of information. Because it's not just data. It's not just identities. It's not just systems names. It's network traffic. It's IP addresses. It's DNS location. It's API calls. It is all this information that's happening across your network and all the signals that you got out there. You have to distill all that data. Well, now you got to get into, I got to normalize that data in some way that I can actually look at it, make it, most of it's not human readable to start with. So if I'm relying on humans, I now have to transform it and get it into a human readable format. I got to understand enough about my environment, what tools and detections I've got in there so I can start tuning this. So it's a very difficult challenge that is being helped by newer machine learning, newer tools that are coming out. I know Perander's tools have got a lot of stuff in there to help you understand data flows and the data encryption piece of it. The other, you're looking at vulnerability management, you're looking at all this data. So getting it rolled up into something that you can start tuning it and dialing it down to what bubbles to the top that is important and for me to deal with is a critical piece of this. And that's going to take a combination of institutional knowledge, all your teams who are part of the process, the business, the salespeople, the application developers, the application support teams, all the infrastructure teams and the cybersecurity teams have all got to be sitting down and talking the same language and understanding this. So they can dial this in to go, this is interesting or this is a problem, right? I got to determine what's interesting and is it going to become a problem? And we have to rely on our tooling and a machine learning to be able to do that because institutional knowledge from the historical knowledge from people to be able to overlay on that and make important decisions about what is important for us to be paying attention to and what's not important for us to be paying attention to.
Let me add one thing to what Ken said. I mean, that's great, right? I think historically, it's always been anomaly detection or analytics. Logging has been a post-event activity, right? Because people always said, we don't want to introduce something in the middle because it's going to slow things down, blah, blah, blah. But right now, that's not sufficient any longer, right? I mean, you need real-time ability to detect and stop a threat because that small window of time is sufficient for a threat to come in, right? So there is that shift of that anomaly detection to happen in real time as opposed to a post-event.
No, that makes perfect sense. All right, well, we're running long for our first episode with you both, so we'll come back with more from you both on the next episode.
And that's the end of the first part of this interview, because Ken and Perander had so much to discuss, so much to tell us and our audience, that we had to split into two. But
indeed,
no despair. Indeed. Next week, part two will be out there. Big thank you to Perander and Ken for joining us. Obviously, we couldn't make this kind of content without good guests. Good guests are rare, so we're happy to get them. I mean, all our guests have been good, but we get the cream of the crop. That's just how it works. But anyway, unless you have anything else to add to an already full podcast, then that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast, you can make patrons, patrons help us keep this in the air. We're on YouTube, you can like, subscribe, hit notification bells, do YouTube stuff. Dave still loves that so much, you have no idea. You can also still go to our website at www.worldingarms.org. There's a link there to the Patreon page, information about the podcast, and you can send your feedback by plain old email to podcast@worldingarms.org. Until next time, my name is Uncertified John.
And my name is Dave 4.0.
So much to unpack there. But we look forward to talking to everybody again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.